As the SA under 19 T20 Women's World Cup is concerned, let me just repeat the quiz question for you very, very quickly. It is as follows, and already I'm getting a couple of answers in. I'm just scanning the answers to see if anybody has it right. He played 80 matches for his country over 8 years, and in total had a 16-year career, but never won a major league title, despite scoring over 300 goals. Referees love him, and there's a very good reason for that. Who is he? And I can tell you that Kumotso from Noni has got it absolutely spot on and has included the middle name as well. So very, very well done to you. Keep the answers coming in because I'm interested to see how you do with this quiz question tonight. Maybe I can persuade the player concerned to go and play for Norwich tonight against Leeds United in a match I'm dreading watching later this evening. Let's talk cricket. And we're joined now by cricket correspondent Kevin Rademeyer. We haven't had you on the show now for a while, Kevin, because things have been fairly quiet in the cricketing world, but great to have you back. Thanks so much again for making yourself available, and lots to unpack. How have you been?
Evening, Michael. Thank you very much. I've been great. It's been a very busy time with sport, and we've actually had quite a lot of cricket. I know, unfortunately, that SABC is not involved with the current SA20, so I don't see you a lot at the ground, but it's been quite hectic. The circus has been moving around the country.
All right, let's talk about the SA20 at the moment and how it's going. Some very, very interesting results. The defending champions, the Sunrisers, Eastern Cape, starting the season very poorly with a whole lot of losses, but then back-to-back wins against the same opponent has put them back in the mix. And now we've seen the Durban side, Durban Super Giants, haven't won any of their last five matches. They've had two rainouts and three losses. Just how's the competition been perceived in South Africa from your experience and the games that you've been at?
I think it's been excellent. And you're correct, the Eastern Cape side, but in the first 2 years as well. I mean, they had very slow starts and they came through the back door and won both tournaments. Here they also had a very slow start, won the last two with bonus points, and are fighting back against the Pretoria Capitals now. I think the tournament has been brilliant. I think there's an amazing vibe. There's been quite a lot of sold-out games around the country, whether it's in Cape Town, Durban, Pretoria, even Joburg. The weather has had a bit of an effect here on Highveld, but I think especially the weekend games have been absolutely brilliant and is bringing cricket alive again in South Africa.
I'm finding that in the schedule you get a lot of matches where the same teams play each other sort of almost back-to-back, almost like a home and away format in soccer. We've had that quite a few times. I suppose it just works out in terms of flights and in terms of the logistics and everything like that. But it's a very concentrated tournament, 34 matches in the space of a couple of weeks effectively, and matches pretty much every single day. So exciting to put some money effectively in CSA's coffers at the end of the day. I think that's probably the main thing, and just ensuring that cricket survives in South Africa.
I think that's the one reason. I think the other reason is try and let the youth play with some experienced South African players as well as international players. It was amazing over the weekend to see Leandre Pretorius opening the batting with Joe Root. We have Ruben Herrmann coming in to bat with Joe Root and the likes. Last year we saw also a couple of different internationals like Phil Salt coming. So I think it's definitely money is an important thing, and the Indians have bought into the competition. But I think we also are extending our net much wider. We've seen a lot of talent coming through, which will help South Africa in the long run.
Kevin, as far as the tournament is concerned, we're seeing a lot of players from the UK playing current and former internationals who are very much involved in the series. Quite a few players from, let's say, the lesser nations in Asia, from Bangladesh, Afghanistan, those sort of nations. But not too many from the West Indies, from Australia, from nations like that, because they obviously have other commitments around the world. Is that maybe, has that taken perhaps in some way a little bit of a gloss off the tournament, or has it maybe created more space for some of the young South African players to make their names in the teams?
Well, if there is a negative about the competition, and it's not solely the Betway SA20 competition, competitions around the world, is exactly that. We've seen today where players from Australia have just been knocked out in their local domestic competition, the Big Bash. 2 days later, they are playing in the SA20. We have someone like Livingston, who played the first four matches for the Pretoria Capitals. Now today, he's playing the T20 against England. against India. Joe Root as well. Just when the tournament starts getting to the knockout, he'll be leaving to go play in the ODI matches in India as well. So these players come and go. I was speaking to an agent today, a British agent, who also says a lot of these players are able to make money in their current competition, wherever it is around the world. If they get knocked out, they're able to go and make money somewhere else, which is very tricky for them. I think that's the one thing. I think the South African country as a whole have bought into these franchises. They've got local support. But if players are coming and going, it loses that tribalism. We don't like to see our players going to other teams, especially if it's around the world. And it takes a bit of a gloss off in that way.
And I suppose that's been, in a way, a feature of all these T20 or SA20 or whatever you want to call them, IPLs, Big Bash, all over the world. The player movement from season to season, you sort of build up a loyalty with a particular franchise, and one season a player is playing for your franchise, the next season he's gone somewhere else, wherever the bid is higher. So in terms of a loyalty aspect, there are numerous players who move around from franchise to franchise wherever they can get the better deal effectively. So how do fans sort of buy into that? Do they just back the team that they back regardless of who's playing?
I do think they just back the local team that's in their region. I think what makes it trickier is, like I said to you, the Indians have bought into a lot of franchise cricket around the world. Not only us, obviously they've got the IPL, they've got one in the Middle East, they've got in the Caribbean as well. Now, maybe for 3 weeks, someone could be playing for the Capitals, playing for a different franchise as soon as he gets to the Caribbean. Maybe he goes then to a different one in the IPL. So he's not even really aligned to the same franchise around the world, which makes it a little bit difficult. I know that Delhi Capitals try to align with the Pretoria Capitals, being the capitals of both countries, as well as in the Caribbean, but that's not really working out as they want it to.
So, Kevin, just give us a run-through of where the tournament stands at the moment, how far we advanced in terms of it. I know we've just passed the halfway mark as far as the league stage is concerned. Which teams are looking good? Where do we stand? And what do you anticipate in the weeks ahead?
The good thing about the competition, we've been a little bit negative now for the last 2 or 3 minutes. The good thing is that all the teams are in for a very long time. It's a six-team competition, and the first four teams basically go to the knockouts. Now, this year, all the teams are quite close. We've got the Pal Royal and MI Cape Town. We're standing on 16 points. Then you've got a whole host within 2 points. The others, Eastern Cape, JSK, Pretoria Capitals, and even the Durban team is within 2 points of each other. That's why tonight's game is so vital. The Pretoria Capitals can go third if they win, or they can stay first. And the Eastern Cape team can also stay third if they do win. So it is very close. The first two positions are obviously vital because you have to bite of the cherry in the playoffs. But any team just slides through the back door can win this competition at the end.
So, Kevin, just quickly, you mentioned the Durban side, and they have a lot of talent in their ranks, but and also some quality spin bowlers, but they haven't really clicked for the last little while. Admittedly, they've had one or two weather-interrupted games. They started the season with that dramatic win over the Pretoria Capitals, but what's gone wrong for them, effectively, that has seen them fall off the bus, so to speak?
Personally, I'm not in the camp, but personally, I think, and I think a lot of people have said this as well, is that the batting order has been a bit of a mixed match. I don't know whether it's smart to have the premium white ball batsman in Klaassen batting at number 6, number 7. I understand he likes to bat after the 12th over, but you need to have your best batsman or batters facing the most balls. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The bowling also has been a very up and down. I thought they were going to be the favourites for the tournament. I think a lot of people would join me with that. And it's still early days. They're not out of the competition. They could click. But I think that batting order just needs to be a bit stabilised because they have amazing batsmen. You also can't put Quinton de Kock at number 4. He's a world-class opener. Keep him there. Let him do what he does up front.
Just a quick update for our listeners before we talk about Under-19 World Cup. The Pretoria Capitals have just lost their second wicket. Goodbye's out for 7, trying a skyer over the offside field and the ball just looping up into the air and the catch taken. So it's 11 for 2 in the third over. That game's becoming more and more interesting by the minute. But Kevin, let's talk about the success stories. South African under 19 women doing the business, admittedly not in the toughest of groups, but destroying the opposition in a number of their matches. They threw to the Super Sixes, and a big nation like Pakistan have not made it through.
That's true. And Michael, let me just go back before we talk about under 19, if you will allow me to.
Of course.
I think it might have come across as negative with the SA20. I think it's a brilliant tournament. And I think even your listeners, I don't know if they've heard, it's even maybe enticing AB de Villiers to come back to cricket.
Oh, wow.
He spoke about it yesterday in a podcast. And after one of the games got rained out in Pretoria, he was actually very devastated. I saw him as we were walking out, and he was devastated. And he said he brought his children here. His children just wanted to watch an over or two overs. And he's really rekindled his love for cricket, for him and for his children. He went to go watch on the grass the other day. And he has said that he's intending to try and return to cricket. He doesn't want to go to the IPL, too much pressure. But SA20 is not out of the question. So that is some amazing news. When it comes to the women under 19, brilliant achievement by them. Played 3, won 3. They're into the Super 6 League already. They're on top of that log already in terms of the Super 6 League. I'm sure we're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And they're standing in a good position to make the semifinals.
Just in terms of the players who've impressed you throughout the tournament, there's some names that won't be familiar to many of our listeners, but young players who are future women proteas, no doubt, and they are staking a claim and showing that they can compete against the best in the world in the age group.
They are, and your listeners will also just understand this is only the second time the tournament is being held. The first one is in 2023 in South Africa. So I think it's amazing that they're getting TV coverage. There's been three of our batsmen are in the top 50 in terms of averages. Gemma Buerta has got an average of 48. Karabo Meso has got an average of 33. And obviously Simone Lawrence is 26. So those batters are looking great for the future. And even our bowlers are doing brilliantly. Kayla Rennick has got six wickets, which puts her fifth overall. And then Seshni Naidu has got the best overall average at 0.25 a wicket. However, it is going to get a lot more difficult. We've played easier competition than we are going to get now in the Super 6 and obviously hopefully the semi-finals and final.
So just in terms of the format, you carry your points through, I presume, carry the results through against the teams you've already played who make it through with you in the group. Is that how the format works? And then you just play teams that you haven't played yet in Super 6 stage?
Pretty much, you are accurate. What happens is there were 16 teams in the tournament. The top three from the four groups go through. So there's 12 teams going through. You are correct, like you said earlier in the program. And then those 12 teams are divided into two groups. It's Group A and Group B. We in Group 2, along with England, who's second on the log at the moment. They lost one point that they were taking through because of a rained out game. The USA, Nigeria, Ireland, and New Zealand are on 2 points. And we play against USA and Ireland in our two Super 6 games. And so we've taken through the two wins against Nigeria and against New Zealand. And then we play those two teams. And then the top two teams of each of those groups go to semifinals.
Now, just you mentioned Nigeria. Nigeria causing a huge upset the other day, beating New Zealand. I mean, great for African cricket, I suppose, and cricket on the continent.
I think it is brilliant. And 2 years ago, Nigeria actually invested 3.5 million, equal to 3.5 million rand a year, into just developing cricket at grassroots level. They said that we're putting in this amount of money. We want to make sure that we have 25,000 new players from Nigeria who start playing cricket, who we can identify as playing cricket, that we can take step by step and then obviously funnel them into elite cricket. So every year their aim is to produce 25,000 new people that are playing cricket from the south and from the north in the different regions. And as you said, who would have ever thought that Nigeria would have beaten New Zealand in cricket? So I think it's starting to pay off. Today they had a bit of a difficult game against South Africa, rain curtailed.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a couple of good batsmen and bowlers who are also going to come through. And I'm sure we're going to see the same in men's cricket very soon.
Just want to ask you finally, and I'm not sure how closely you've kept an eye on the whole tournament, but knowing you, I know you have your finger on the pulse in pretty much everything that's happening in cricket anywhere in the world. So I've noticed, just looking through the scores, a lot of very, very low scores and teams getting bowled out for next to nothing and very, very slow scoring in terms of run rate per over. Is that partly as a result of the conditions in Malaysia, or is it partly as a result of some of the mismatches that we've seen so far in the early stage of the competition?
I think it's a mixture of both. You must remember, very few of these girls have even travelled overseas, never mind to an Asian country like Malaysia, where things are very different. The wickets are extremely different, for instance, to South African wickets or Australian wickets. Also, it is 16 teams in the tournament at the moment, so we are playing teams like Samoa, which was our second match, and they were bowled out, I don't know if your listeners remember, for 16
yes,
runs.
Yes, correct.
When you're facing the likes of South African bowlers who are quick, who can move the ball, who can swing the ball, it's difficult. For instance, the Samoan team would have never faced it in domestic cricket. They
yes.
don't face it in the net.
Sure.
Now they get to a world-class tournament and they are surprised. I think those erratic scores will change in the Super Six League as well as in the semi-final when the teams are a bit more even.
Kevin, we're going to have to leave it at that point. As always, thanks so much for your wonderful contributions to the show and for updating us about everything that is happening in the world of cricket. I can tell you that Pretoria Capitals have lost another wicket, Riley Rousseau out without scoring. So that game is looking very interesting at the moment. Pretoria Capitals 20 for 3 in the fourth over, chasing a target, as I told you. I'm just trying to get that particular number for you at the moment. But they are still a fair way away from doing that. 7 wickets in hand at the moment. I can tell you it's 0-0 between Magesi and Sundowns after about 9 minutes.